They say if Buddhism goes up, it starts with the human condition. And Christianity, for instance, comes down. In the beginning, God made heaven and earth. So there we've got the, what in Buddhism is called kojo, aspiring up, and Christianity is grace coming down. And then somehow, that seems pretty satisfactory. And then somebody said, well, see, the fact is, Buddhism has always gone in from the top, through the courts, and the intellectual people. The Buddha's first disciples were Brahmins, about 80% of them. So it's Buddhism really that's gone down, you see. Whereas Christianity and Islam went up through the underprivileged, mainly women and slaves. So that kind of reverses it, doesn't it? And then they say, and as a matter of fact, the Amida, the grace, the Amida who saves, simply if people turn to Amida, regardless of their conduct, the Buddha forgives. But in Christianity, oh no. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive them the trespasses against us. That's to say, there has to be human effort. In Buddhism, no, only faith. So it's the reverse again. Now, all this is ice. It can be utterly interesting. And I've just read, and I persisted to the end, a long debate on it between Buddhists of the Tendai school and some Christian missionaries in Japan, highly intellectual people. And at the end of it, you're interested, you're stimulated, and you've got a talking point yourself to pass on, maybe. But that's it. Nothing's changed. It's ice. And that ice has to be melted. In the glacial age, the ice looks beautiful. But the plants can't grow. And it's rigid. And it's not much good for anything, except perhaps to put in your double whiskies in the form of little cubes. Well, in some of the schools, they say that our human, ordinary human condition is ice. We freeze into a particular pattern. That pattern's not necessarily a bad one, but it depends on the circumstances very much. I'm as good as gold now. I've no reason to be anything else. I know where the next meal is coming from, and perhaps one after that. I've got security, home over my head. So, yes, provided it doesn't take too much trouble, and I happen to feel like it, and maybe I see a possibility of some gain to myself in the long run, I might be very willing to help you, give you a hand. I'm frozen in that pattern. But things change because it's rigid. It flips over into the reverse. And then I'm something very different. Still frozen in the same pattern, but I'm the reverse of that pattern. And we see this all the time. People like Mussolini and Hitler were socialists. Very keen socialists. Then they changed. Frozen. Just changes. How often love changes to hate. And even hate can change to love. They both mean intense interest. You can't hate someone you're not interested in. So these are fixed patterns. They may look very good, and they may look terrible. But while they're fixed and they're frozen ice, the point is that there's no real life there. It can look beautiful, but there's no life. Now, we feel this obscurely. We can feel, well, if you only have strong feeling, like St. Francis and his order. Now, how can you say that's ice? Within 24 years of the death of Francis, the whole business of poverty had been abolished. They were building great edifices. They became great centers of learning. Francis left a testament warning against these very things. And within 24 years of his death, an infuriated minister was taking that testament of Francis, a copy of it, and burning it on the head of one of the so-called spiritual Franciscans who wanted to keep to the original order of poverty. The pattern turned over. Well, now, why do these patterns fall? We feel there's something wrong. We don't know what to do. Well, this is a folk story in the Himalayas. It's damn cold there. And there is a berry, bushes of berries, which are brilliant red. And the folk story is that in the winter, when the monkeys up there are terribly cold, they gather around these red berries, trying to warm themselves, because it looks like a fire. And somehow, if you get round it, you feel warmer. Well, they do actually get a tiny little bit warmer because they're all huddled around. So they're warming each other. But there's no actual heat coming from the red berry, which is only a berry. It's not fire. Well, in the same way, we try to find something in the world which will melt us and warm us and give us life. And people can find it outside their usual. They search for it in their usual haunts, and they can't find it. Then they start looking elsewhere. A seasoned American ambassador, for instance, has got to be a fairly experienced and cynical man. But he can meet, the head of a state whose policies weren't necessarily in conformity with American policies. But he wrote of this head of the state, he said there's this warmth from him. He's the sort of man that a child would instinctively want to climb up onto his lap, or a dog would instinctively sidle up. And a Christian dean, he met again a man, not Christian at all, in fact, a declared atheist. But he said, the moment anybody else's troubles are mentioned, other people's struggles, his whole face changes. And you see this deep concern for other people. He said, although he was not a Christian, I am a Christian. I felt a great shame. I felt this was the true spirit of Christianity. Well, the man whom any child would want to climb up into his lap was Stalin. And the report was by the American ambassador Biddle. The man whose face lit up with concern was Chairman Mao Zedong, who now, we believe, killed more people than Hitler and Stalin put together. And the dean was Hewlett Johnson. He was one of the few Westerners to have a face-to-face interview with Chairman Mao. They were seeking for something to warn them. And they saw something they didn't understand. They didn't, of course, speak the language in either case. And they tried to warm themselves, and they felt somehow a warmth there. But of course, it led to nothing. Dora Russell, she was a considerable thinker and writer in her own right. Now, she was hypnotized by Chairman Mao, as so many were. And sometimes you get the idea that people like Mao, who are worshipped, something mischievous gets into them, and they think, how far could you go? What would they stick at? So when he was talking to some educationists, he said, you know, the ideas of education, the traditional ideas, they're not right. So now take a literary example on The Dream of the Red Chamber. That's one of the Chinese classics. And suppose you get a student and he answers all the questions about The Dream of the Red Chamber perfectly correctly. But in fact, they're memorized from his textbook. They're absolutely right. Well, most examiners would mark him 100%. The boy next to him peeps over and copies all his answers. The examiner sees him do it. But these answers are correct, are they not? So the second boy should get 100% too. Because that's the world. It doesn't say, where'd you get your knowledge from? It says, is your knowledge correct? And then he said, and then take a boy answering the exam questions who's never read The Dream of the Red Chamber and just invents the answers. He ought to get high marks, because he's creative. And then he went on to say, and you know, there's all this prejudice against hiring but clever boy, to take your place in the examination. And that's been condemned in the past, but actually it's very enterprising. And if you do that and you can get a correct examination paper, then you should pass. Well, Dora Russell quotes this in her one of her books with approval. In other words, she's worshipping something to warm, something to melt the ice that she felt obscurely. Well, the end of her life, she said, she was a great idealist, but she said it's all been ashes. All these enthusiasms to which she devoted so much, self-sacrifice and enthusiasm and hard work, she said it all turned to ashes. So trying to warm ourselves from something in the world, we may join a group, and because we're together in the group, we can feel a tiny little bit of warmth. But this is not a true light, not a true fire.